This is Joseph Coco. I'm at APE 2017 on behalf of Becky Holburn's Art Process blog and YouTube channel. If you could introduce yourself, Stephen.
Hi, I'm Stephen Russell Black. Okay. Bay Area artist. I do creepy horror stuff.
Nice. So do you think horror is a good fit for APE? I mean, I see quite a bit of different things here. Some more horror, some more anime inspired, some more cartoony.
Sure.
How do you feel that people walking around are responding to your work?
It's definitely a smaller group of the larger population are my people, but they come and find me out, so I'm happy for that.
Cool.
But APE's a great show, celebrating all alternative creators, so always happy to be here.
Okay. Is this your first time coming?
This is my third show, third time being at APE.
Okay. So I can't remember when it moved from San Francisco back to San Jose. Was your first in San Francisco, or you
first,
started?
First show was in San Jose. Yeah, so I've been doing the show as long as Dan has taken the show back over.
Okay, that makes sense. So can you tell me a little bit about how the show has progressed since it's come here?
I think it's the same. It's the same creators. We just changed cities. Like it's all kind of the same.
Okay.
Same people and energy and stuff. So.
Yeah.
I know Dan just wanted to bring it back home to San Jose.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can't remember. We went to the. Our first was the last time it was in San Francisco.
Yeah, for me.
We didn't table there. We were just attending. But I can't remember if we met him there. But it makes sense that he would want to bring it back because he was more interested in putting it more back in creators of independent comic type works hands. So can you tell me a little bit about your background in art? What are some of the inspirations for your pieces, and how did you decide to do horror work?
So I grew up in a little town in Ohio, and there's nothing really to do but live inside your own head, and I fell in love with Stephen King novels.
Okay.
So that's kind of where the creepy stuff comes from. And then the other inspiration that was big up for me was the paintings of Dalí, so I love surreal horror stuff. Actually, the first Stephen King book that I got was The Stand, and it had illustrations by Bernie Wrightson, and I just fell in love with like those illustrations and what it meant to be an illustrator and that kind of stuff. So that was my first love was the horror stuff with Bernie and Stephen King, and so that stuck. I've loved that ever since.
Okay. What type of shows do you normally table at? I know some horror people have good luck at like tattoo shows and that sort of thing.
Yeah, Monster Palooza in Pasadena is my favorite show.
Okay.
It's kind of an industry show for people who do creature design and movie makeup, special effects.
Yeah, I was about to ask that.
Yeah, so there's a few 2D artists, myself and Alan Williams and a couple other people, but mostly it's for special effects, so a lot of sculptors. But it slants all towards horror and monsters.
Okay. And I know there's been a pretty big surge in horror games, like independent, low-budget horror games coming out. Have you dabbled in that any? Or
I don't do a lot of commercial work.
Okay.
It's mostly fine art. The commercial work that I do is very few like comic book covers
sure.
or personal commissions for people. But no gaming.
Okay. Makes sense. So I know you traded with Becca the compilation of your work. Is this self-published or?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I ran a Kickstarter for book one and book two, and actually the third Kickstarter a week ago to fund the third book.
Cool. About how long do you spend just on average on a piece? Is that something you kind of plan ahead of time?
I don't plan them ahead of time unless it's for a commission or a cover.
Right, because
that way I'll do the traditional likes. I'll do doodles and I show that to the director, and then we go for a final drawing, and then that gets refined, and then a final painting. But the pieces I do for myself are just stream of consciousness out of my head. I'll start with a face, and then just let it turn into whatever it turns into.
Okay.
And that might mean it fails, and I throw it away.
Yeah.
Or it might mean I find something really unexpected and beautiful, but that's the chance that I'm happy to take on those personal pieces. They take about 3 to 6 hours for the drawing. And then paintings, of course, take about a week or two.
So it seems like horror, I'm sure a lot of art forms are like this, but you probably need to take in a variety of work to try to figure out how you can uniquely express your vision in something that's terrifying, I guess. Where do you go to try to find inspiration for peace? I mean,
oh, sure.
You said you kind of just start playing with things and see what comes out of it, but
yeah,
I'm sure
also,
you have to be fueling your subconscious somehow in order for that to work out.
Yeah, so I'm visiting like the Academy of Sciences in San Francisco,
okay.
And Natural History Museum in LA, and I'm constantly taking photos of like skeletons and pictures of my friends screaming and like just like constantly taking in like and documenting as much reference and things as possible. And then kind of like taking that stuff all in, and then when I combine it, make sense of it, and then put it back out is kind of the work that I'm gonna create.
Okay. And do you do the gallery scene very much?
I do. I show at a gallery in Davis, California called The Pence.
Okay.
And I'll have a one-man show there in December of next year.
Awesome.
So far I've just been doing group shows with them. And I also show at Sketchpad Gallery in San Francisco.
Okay. How did you develop the contacts for that? People just see you at shows, or you're directly reaching out to
everything
people?
These days seems to go through Facebook. Like, you post some stuff on Facebook, and then someone will message you, like, hey, do you want to do this gallery show? And you're like, okay, and then you do one, and it kind of leads to, people see you in that space,
nice.
And then it leads to
so
more.
So you're just regularly putting out your work online, and hopefully somebody will find you?
Yeah, I put out stuff daily, so I'll start the drawing in the morning, and I'll post that. And then later in the afternoon, when I've kind of turned it into something else, I'll post it, and I post when the finish comes out. And if it's a painting and I'm working on for a week, I'll post daily, like, the progress of the piece until it's finished. And through that process of posting, like, making content daily, like, keeps people coming back and keeps spreading the art, you know, farther and farther.
Sure. What mediums do you work in mostly?
The drawings are all Prismacolor and charcoal on tone paper.
Okay.
And the paintings are all oil.
Yeah, I kind of had that feel, but I sometimes can't tell. Some people have gotten really good at faking things, faking, I guess, might not be the appropriate word, emulating things digitally.
Oh, sure,
so
yeah.
I wanted to ask to be sure.
Absolutely, and especially if you've only seen a print, like, you sometimes they're a really good painter and they just happen to be, you know, use digital, and it's like,
yep.
Oh, that's a killer painting, and you're like, well, it's a Photoshop piece, and you're like, yeah, but it's still a killer painting, like,
yeah.
It's just sad that there's not a physical, like, relic, and I'm really into... so the piece are just like, you know, visual communications kind of stuff. You're putting your thoughts on the paper and you're like trying, you know, hoping that someone else understands what you're doing. But the physical originals and having that big oil painting that's like this thing that you labored over and you like you see the mark making. So it's just such a more visceral like reaction when someone sees that in person. And
yeah, especially with the textures, I feel like that can add a whole lot to horror, really.
Yeah, and I love that the art object as a relic, like, because the pieces online are what people are interacting with and. Excited about or sharing or that's kind of their daily experience with my work.
Yeah.
But the pieces are this relic of like, this is the thing I actually worked on, and I think that that's cool.
Yeah. So how often do people actually reach out to you online and say, hey, you've been posting this thing, can I buy it?
Often, actually.
Nice.
The paintings are all sold and I just have a few drawings left that I brought to the show, but luckily that is a great problem to have, because I when I come to these shows, I don't always have a lot of stuff to share or bring to sell, because since I post them as they're being made, if someone connects to a piece and they want it, then I'll sell it to them right away.
Okay. And you talked about doing a few of the comic book covers. How did you develop those relationships? Again, is that just something Facebook?
Yeah.
Somebody saw your work online and said, hey, would you consider doing some commercial work for me?
Totally. Usually I've sent stuff into to publishers before and never had a bite, but it's usually the writers fall in love with my work and then say, hey, I want your stuff on my cover. And,
yeah.
And then it goes from there. But yeah.
Yeah. I've talked to some horror writers, and as if I can recall, that's how they met up with their respective artists, is that, you know, the work spoke to them and they just developed a relationship and said, hey, well, let's do this. You know, I've got this portion of the book written. Can you, you know, create a cover for me based on what I have?
Yeah. Which is a much more fun, like, personal relationship than, like, maybe some... It might be a little more sterile if you just send in, like, blind samples and, like, some art director, like, oh, I'll give you a job and everything. But this is more special because you know that the writer is a fan of your work and wanted it on the cover, so...
Yeah.
Like, that's really special, and I'll always do that.
Rather than you just selling to some company and that company trying to sell it to some other company or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So how often do you actually bring original pieces to shows?
As often as I have them.
Okay.
And then sometimes I'm trying to hold some back now, talking to other artists. It's hard, though, because you make stuff, and I immediately want to share it.
Yeah.
So I'm always putting everything as I'm doing it, like, online on Instagram. But I'm learning now I need to hold a few pieces back to have these nice reveals at shows.
Yeah.
So people coming to a given show like Ape or Monster Palooza or something have something special.
Yeah, even if they're a super fan, it's something new and fresh for them.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's like something that's a unique exclusive just that they saw it first there.
Okay. That's some good advice. So how do you decide the pricing for different shows? Because you mentioned you did kind of a variety of things. Do you basically price the same across the board, whether you're doing an independent show or more of a horror show?
I do price the same all across the board.
Okay.
And that's difficult also with gallery work because they take 50% of your sales.
Yeah.
So you can't immediately bump your prices up to reflect, like, to try to get the same numbers because it's just not fair to the end
patrons at that.
Yeah, yeah. Patrons. So, but prices are the same across the board for everything.
Okay.
And then they slowly rise from year to year as you're making more complex pieces and work's getting better.
Yeah, well, you need to reward yourself for all the time that you put into your pieces.
Yeah,
I mean, just because it's taking you the same amount of time doesn't mean it isn't of more value.
Sure.
I mean,
but it actually takes you less. It seems to, as the years go on, it takes you less time because you get, like, really proficient at doing things and you start to do things quicker. So gets even better because you're even if you had the same amount or had prices at the same amount, like, as you go, you're getting better and faster.
Yeah. Well, I just know, like, for instance, with webcomic artists, what they'll often do is, not in terms of selling things necessarily, but when they start a webcomic, they might not have the skill to produce the quality of the piece they want. So as they learn new skills, they end up taking a little longer on the comic pages because they can devote more time to make it look like what they had originally intended to. So that's what I was going at in terms of, but I guess what you're referring to is basically you're happy with the quality of everything you're putting out. So now at this point, it's just time savings as you're learning to do techniques faster and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're always constantly evolving and trying new stuff a new texture, a new thing, something like, but comics also can be like super tough too. Cause that's a time sink. Like you could put so much work into each individual page, but when people read through the book, like they're done and like they read the book in like 10 minutes, but like it took you like months and months to like, put this thing together. So
exactly. Especially if it's light in the dialogue, it's like some people won't even really take a moment to appreciate this beautiful crowd scene that you rendered.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, I spent five times longer on that than all these other pages, but because there's no dialogue, you're just going to blow right past that, aren't
totally.
You?
Totally. Totally. It's also like that weird disconnect for the writer too. Like the writer will just say, oh, it's a two-page splash scene of like a giant landscape or whatever, right? And he takes like 2 seconds to write that, and then the artist is like, oh, like takes 2 days to have to draw all that stuff, right?
Right. So I noticed that this is book one.
That's book one.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Because you said you were releasing the third now, and I saw the two different colors. So it just actually occurred to me that they were separate books. So. What made you decide to compile everything into an art book? You just wanted to make your work available to a larger crowd, or you felt like it was basically a good portfolio?
I thought it was a good time to like commemorate all the hard work that I put in. Actually, that was kind of the impetus for on Instagram. On Instagram a few years ago, I was trying to build a following. So what I would do is I would do an 11x17 finished drawing every day. And I did it for 72 days in a row before I kind of hit a wall and was like, couldn't go anymore. And
pretty good.
Yeah, no, it was fun. I was exhausted at the end of that, but it did what I was trying to achieve and build a large following, and it got my eyeballs on the work. And so that first book really was just trying to take all that stuff, that hard work that I put in that year, and putting everything into a book and to kind of remember the work that I put in.
And was there much cleanup that you had to do, scanning all this work and getting it so that it was published ready? Or for the most part, after you finish a piece, you just digitize it?
It's part of my process when I'm doing the piece. As I work on it, I'm documenting it by sharing to Instagram, and then when the piece is finished, scanning.
Okay. So yeah, at that point, it's just laying it out and then writing the sizes and all that sort of thing.
Totally.
Okay. So I did want to ask, do you have the books in stores locally?
Stuart Ng Books carries my stuff. They have a website. He's out of Los Angeles. And then a couple of shops around San Francisco but mostly through my Etsy store.
Right. And where can we find your work online?
If everything filters through Instagram, so if you're on Instagram and you find me on there, it's just Stephen Russell Black. And then there's links to everything else through that.
Okay.
And I also show once a month on a website called everydayoriginal.com.
What is it?
It's called everydayoriginal.com.
Okay.
So each day of the month, a different artist has post something, and they're small works, and they're meant to be like small, bite-sized like kind of things, and everything's priced under $500 for new collectors or collectors that are looking for a smaller piece, and that's been a really fun place to show my work as well.
Okay. And I noticed that you had a newsletter sign-up form on your table.
Yeah.
I've been hearing more independent creators talk about how important it is to build an audience through a newsletter because all these social networking sites seem to be kind of ephemeral. One is popular and then it's less popular. What have you found? It sounds like you built quite the audience on Instagram. So obviously you are hitting, and Facebook, so you're hitting social media pretty hard.
Sure.
But what made you decide to also do a newsletter, and how do you feel like that audience is different than your social networking audiences?
I think sometimes the mailing list can be people that aren't really on social media, and so it's also like a more direct contact because they might not see it. Like they might go on social media and go off. And the way that the analytics of Facebook work now, like a post might not necessarily have been seen by everyone unless it was a popular thread.
Yeah.
And so the mailing list, just at least you saw it. Like it goes to you, and like you know you have to delete it, the email, before you know it's
yeah.
On
unless
your...
you're spamming, there's no filter for email. Right?
Yeah. And so mostly it's people who have signed up, so they ask to be on the list.
Of course.
But at least you have to, like, it's in your inbox, and you have to like either look at it or like just at least see the headline that I have a new something coming out, and before you delete it. So I know that people are at least seeing those.
Okay. So you just wanted to make sure that the people who followed you could keep up with everything that you were doing if they wanted to?
Yeah, even if they missed something. Because I know, like, I just did the third Kickstarter, and there's someone who had supported the first two and was like, oh, I didn't even know they had a third book out. It's like...
Yeah, just a lot of information coming in.
Sure, so. And then I feel like I'm a broken record every day, like, during the Kickstarter, because you're like, look at the campaign. Like, and
yeah, there's only so many ways, so many different ways you can say, look at the campaign.
Like, I just want to share the work, but, like... during that Kickstarter period, like you're a broken record, right? You're constantly sharing the link, and finding new ways to share the link. You know, like here's some design stuff I did, or here's like this thing that we're doing, and different aspects of the book. But you sort of run out of like things to say, and you're just kind of like pushing that link constantly. And so I feel
Don't
like a broken
forget.
Record, but then there's at the same point too, someone told me yesterday, they're like, oh, I didn't know a third book was coming out. So it's like, you know, you got to do all the things to try to get the word out on your projects.
Right. So, we back a lot of comic stuff on Kickstarter, but we haven't looked too much into the fine art world of Kickstarter. Are art books from fine artists big on Kickstarter?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
For sure. There's been a couple of books. 44 Flood was like a company that did like a really, really big one. Art books are pretty popular on there.
Okay.
I think they're probably less prevalent because comics just seem to come out super fast. Like,
yeah.
Indie creators are putting out like, you know, individual issues like pretty often on there, and even trades and things that come out fast. So I think the art books come out less frequently.
Yeah,
but,
it definitely seems to be much more rare for a comic to have a milestone for a hardback. I think it just seems like the people on Kickstarter probably aren't looking to spend that much money on an individual comic, but there are exceptions. Like Becca was just part of an anthology, 1001 Nights, where the most basic tier for the full set of comics is $100.
Yeah.
Because it's like a 3-part volume bound set.
That's a high entry point for a lot of people, you know, especially like Ape or a certain comic show. If you're coming specifically for like zines or indie creators that are doing like comics,
you're gonna spend like $2 to $5. Yeah.
You know, $10 at the most on a trade, maybe. Like, so $100 price point probably prices out some people, but
yeah.
So it's the same thing. Art books can be a little more pricey, and so that might not be on people's radar just because it's a higher price point. But
sure. Okay, and finally, would you have some advice to an artist who's considering, or a writer who's considering tabling at Ape for the first time?
I would say come to the show and walk around and kind of know the playing field before you jump in and play, and ask everybody their kind of experiences and also know what it is that you, like the work that you're trying to put out and what form that takes and how best to present it would be good questions to ask specifically. And then once you have that playing field kind of laid out, then you can go in very analytically and line up all of the chores and tasks and things that you need to accomplish to be able to come and do it successfully.
All right, that sounds great. And thank you, Stephen. I hope you have a great ape.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to Up and Conning Artist. A video version is available on the Natasoup YouTube channel, along with some convention recaps. And if you wouldn't mind, please consider supporting Becky Hilburn by contributing to her Patreon or checking out her Tiny People comic at 7inchkara.com and wherever books are sold.